Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by today. As we talked about earlier last week and yesterday, social network has become a big part of most of our lives. And, of course, because I do the show, I put out there that I like to hear all the different things that are going on. So a lot of people send me videos. And, of course, yesterday we talked at length about the video of the mom whipping her daughter with a belt. Well, the same day that I got that video, I got a video that was posted by a young man. He's got the camera on himself, and he's putting up posters or like little signs of all the different things that he feels about himself. And it's incredibly sad. And perhaps if I hadn't seen it before, I would have been shocked. He says, "Hi, I'm Jonah. I look happy, right? Well, I'm not. What all you see is the fake me. But I'm the real Jonah Mowry. I've done things. Things I'm not proud of. I've cut a lot. I have scars." He shows us his arms, the backs of his biceps, his forearms, around his neck, up on his shoulders. By the way, he's a cute young boy. Suicide was an option many, many times. The first time I cut myself, I was in the second grade. I get bullied every day. This started in first grade. And I'm starting eighth grade next month. At this point in time, he's crying on the video. "I'm not ready. I have one close friend left. The rest are starting high school. I'm scared to go back. A lot of people hate me. I don't know why, but I guess I do. Because I kind of hate me too. Gay, fag, dick, douche, homo, asshole. The list goes on and on. I can't do this anymore. I'm tired of being torn down. building myself up to only be torn down again. I wish you could all see his face. The struggle is great. Great, great, great. But I'm not going anywhere. Because I'm stronger than that. And I have a million reasons to be here. And he waves goodbye to everyone. The comments start, please, mostly at this time of year, stop, put down the phone, talk to each other, find out what's going on. Then there's another comment. Who is this boy? I just want to give him a hug. I watched this as he cried and I cried. This took me to a place I survived. Yes, it's very sad, and if you're gay, you feel, you get this feeling. But if his family and friends and the people who are watching step up and give people like him the support they need, then we have done our best. This boy brings back memories of me at this age. When I was that age, I struggled with these things as well. I was not bullied, but I had to keep everything a secret for fear of the repercussions that were there. Such a sad reality. You know, all of these comments that are here came from men. I found that to be kind of interesting. The very last one is from a woman. But the last comment from a guy, such a sad reality that we've survived. We must take care to stand, to let our gay youth know we care. And then the only girl that comments, this makes me sad and angry. I know that kind of pain. This should not be happening. So here's the truth, too, about these issues. You know, hurting yourself is not uncommon. And it is not unusual for people to go to any length to numb the pain. And what I hear in this world is that they get so numb that they do it to feel something. A couple of years ago, I spent quite a bit of time with a young woman, girl, who was covered with scars. When she put her arm in my hands, I had a feeling that goes beyond sadness, that goes beyond disbelief, that goes beyond appall. I had somebody very close to me at a very young age who tried to take their life. And they did it by cutting their wrists. And when it was all over and they survived, I said, how? I can't imagine doing that to myself. And the answer was, if I'd have thought I was going to have to tell you why I did it, I probably wouldn't have done it. And I thought to myself, this isn't about me, though. This is just about you. I didn't give that speech because there was still too much pain and the wounds were too new and many, many reasons. This person is fine and well today, but has certainly had their struggles. But the cutting of oneself is discussed in most of the literature that I read about it as a bipolar affliction. I don't know that. I read that. I'm not a psychiatrist or anything like that, so I'm not going to say that's what it is, but that's what I've read. I also have read stories of people who don't actually cut themselves with a knife or a razor blade, which is the choice problem in that world. Some of them scratch themselves so deep. I've read stories of soldiers who have PTSD, who have dug at their skin to make wounds in their skin. And, of course, the old adage that comes to my mind is you're purely and simply not comfortable in your own skin. I get that. I totally get that. And I think every one of us have had feelings like that at one point in time. So I don't think it's as, I know it's not as unusual as one might think it is. There are a lot of articles available on the internet in regard to inflicting pain like that. And I think that there are a lot of people who do other things to hurt themselves. Overindulging sometimes is a way of hurting yourself. I think that doing stuff that you know is not good for you, it's going in the back door of the problem, but it's still one of those things. What about the people that are daredevils? What about the people that can't get enough of the bungee jumping and the rock climbing and they need or they have the need to feel more alive, to challenge their excitement, their joy of life? I realize that everybody has days when they think, oh, God, do I have to do this again? Oh, my God, I wish I could just lay here in bed all day long. Anybody that tells you they've never had that feeling is not being honest with you or themselves. We all have those days. We all have the days when it's harder to live, harder to do the things that we know we're supposed to do. I am a tremendous procrastinator. I many times have got to wrap my brain about something before I can even try to do it, especially technical things. I am such a dunce when it comes to technical things that I have to think about it and wrap my brain around it. And almost always I can figure my way through it. But it's getting to the point where I think I can. My husband is very mechanically inclined. He can do so many different things that no one has ever trained him how to do. And I can't tell you how many times in our 46 years that he's woke up in the middle of the night and said, oh, I know what I can do with this. If I do this, and then I do that, and then I do this, that'll fix it. And I realize that he has been thinking about it and actually went to sleep thinking about it. And in his sleep, he formulated a way to fix the problem. That's his way of wrapping his brain around something. I think that living this life is not so easy. I think that doing the things that you believe are right is not so easy. The worst part about it, though, is when you are so vividly aware of the fact that you're not the only one that's judging you. You can ignore a lot of stuff in your own head, push it way back so it's not at the forefront. But then you open your eyes a little bit and you realize other people are passing judgment on you too because of your inability to take care of something or your inability to manifest something in your life or handle something in your life. I think all of these things are big issues. However, those are things you should be able to work on with yourself. The problem today goes back, of course, to the bullying. So many of the decisions we make in regard to ourselves, such as something as horrific as cutting yourself with a razor blade, is brought on by the thoughts and the deeds and the behavior of others. So what can be done about that? Izzy tells us in the Bullies to Buddies book that we need to, first of all, not give it credence unless we believe it ourselves. So many times he said, you know, I said, well, what if you do have a big nose? And what if you know you have a big nose? And he said, well, then you have to say you're right. I know I have a big nose. But I think it gives me personality. Or when I'm old enough and can afford it, I might get it fixed. Whatever suits your purpose. There's a very famous movie star and singer out there in our world today, Barbara Streisand, who gets more respect than any single singer I've ever seen and has done her share of amazing roles in the movie theaters and Broadway and Carnegie Hall and all those places. And when people met her, they said, oh, my God, you have a beautiful voice, but nobody's ever going to get past your nose. Can you imagine hearing that when you're offering the world a voice like Barbara Streisand's? Well, you do have a really nice voice, but then you have that giant big nose. And it's like, you know, she never did anything about it. She kind of grew into it, if you will. Because even I, there was an old picture posted of her the other day on a magazine that I was looking at of her when she played Funny Girl. And her nose did look bigger to me. And it did kind of like greet you before you looked at the rest of her face. But her feeling was, this is the package and the nose comes with it. So there's that too. There's you have the ability and the power. Power is a big thing. You have the ability and the power to not give any significance to anything that's said to you. Nothing. The only time it should hurt you is when you believe it too. The only time it should upset you drive you to a place that you can't get out of is when you agree with your bully. So, in the case of homosexuality, again, it's a lot different now than it was when I was in eighth grade. You could suspect somebody was a little feminine, the boys, and you could expect or suspect that a girl was a little tomboyish, but it was not the first place you went. It was not the first thing you said. Today, because of the openness of homosexuality, it's up for grabs by everybody, even people that don't have the intellect to deal with it. So when you have a sweet like this young man that's on this video, if you all get the chance, it's on my Facebook page. He's baby-faced. He's adorable. And the tears stream down his face. He doesn't sob. He fights the tears. And he struggles with how much fun is made of him and how much judgment is done to him. But the truth of the matter is, he's unhappy with it himself. So maybe one of the greatest gifts we can give to people who are not cookie cutter and don't fit the profile of a typical eighth grader is to teach them to embrace who they are. Not run around and shove it in everybody's face, because you don't want anybody to do that. That's annoying. But personal acceptance of who you are is important. Being happy in your own skin is important. One of my listeners, he doesn't come on the show very often anymore, but I stay in contact with him, grew up in a time when there was a lot of issues in the arena of gay and straight teenagers. And he's an amazing guy. And he and his partner took on the raising of two teenage boys. And they love them to death. So it's about acceptance. He says things that make me laugh all the time. Before I really got to know him, I thought to myself, oh my God, I love, love, love his sense of humor. His personality is amazing. And I can think of some of the things that he's put on Facebook that just have me in stitches. So he's learned to love himself. And you really think about it. You really can't expect other people to love you unless you love you. Can you? Can you absolutely believe that other people should love you when you don't? So, bullying, of course, is what pushes you over the edge. The constant and the chronic picking, the names that this young man said he was called, and the way people treated him, obviously, made deeper cuts in him than he could with a razor. Scarred him deeper than he can scar himself. So it is what it is, but it's all about your personal acceptance. It's all about how you feel about yourself. There are some warning signs for people who hurt themselves. So if you are the parent or the guardian of a young person that constantly has cuts, bruises, sores, you don't see the accident that they claim took place, you don't see any extreme clumsiness. They like to hide a lot in their room. They have severe ups and downs, and the telltale marks on their body says, are you need to get some help. Everybody finds themselves in horrendous situations. Life is like a roller coaster ride, and you never know what tomorrow's going to bring. I think that learning to deal with that roller coaster ride, and maybe even take some excitement from it instead of having it bring you so much angst, is a good place to start. I want to read something from an article that I found to be, I mean, a lot of it is pure and simple, but also known as self-mutilation disorder, cutting yourself disorder is a condition in which people debilitated by the current events end up cutting their wrists, hands, chest, belly, etc. with razor blades, knives, needles, pieces of glass, scissors, or any other accessible sharp object. Besides cutting, other forms of self-injury, like banging the head on the wall, breaking one's bones, lighting the hair or skin on fire, swallowing sharp objects to injure internal organs, drinking harmful chemicals, scratching one's body, multiple piercings. Now, I want to make a side note there. There is a world of piercing and tattoos that is considered beautiful, beauty enhancing, something that people do because they appreciate the art of tattoos and piercing. I don't think that that is necessarily a part of this, but that's just a side note. Glaring into the hot ball of the sun till one's eyes relent, burning one's skin with hot objects, interfering with the wound healing process, also all those things come under the cutting yourself disorder. People who resort to this kind of emotional defense mechanism for coping with stress and depression are referred to as cutters. This disorder is often mistaken to be suicidal behavior. However, that's not true. People who cut themselves do not intend to kill themselves. Instead, this is their way to let out the pain piercing their hearts. They do not even wish to injure themselves. They just want to reduce the agony bottling within them. To put it in simpler terms, self-injury is their way of emotional self-defense. When cutters watch the blood oozing out of their wounds, their emotional lacerations seem to palliate. The physical gash on their body causes their minds to digress from the tormenting thoughts caused by the dire situation. Now, see, this is a different point of view. And I suspect this is true in some cases as well. We can call this evasion from the truth of occurred events. In other words, remember the old story of it was a joke for many years. You stub your toe, and oh God, stubbing your toe hurts so bad. And you bite your finger so that your finger hurts instead of your toe, and take your attention away from your toe for a little while. It sounds like this is a part of this manifestation brought on by cutting. The tendency of cutting oneself is not only seen when one feels extreme pain, but is also seen when depressed people cannot feel any emotion in them at all. Now, this is the other side of this coin. They find themselves numb to sorrow, joy, anger, and other emotions. The situations they encounter seemed to suck all their emotions away from them. They no longer feel human and warm, instead feel like a rag doll, unaffected, unstirred by things happening around them. To extricate themselves from this feeling of coldness and numbness, they injure their bodies just to feel alive, to feel pain that is real. This gives them a more on-earth feeling rather than feeling stuck in a bottomless pit. Self-injury effects are seen to affect the person's study life, family, and social life. Some even end up losing their jobs. Cutting is not the solution to coping with depression. By injuring oneself, a cutter does not realize that he or she is only dealing with the symptoms rather than dealing with the underlying malaise. The relief they attain by injuring themselves is temporary, which is why they keep doing it. About 2 million Americans today resort to self-injury as a mode of coping with depression. Myriads of people continue doing this for years at a stretch. The onset of this condition is mostly in puberty, wherein young people show symptoms like withdrawal, depression, and what they are going through, and use self-injury excuses like, the dog or the cat scratched me, I hurt myself while doing a task, etc. These are used by the kids that are, you know, inflicting wounds to themselves. Large ratio of cutters correspond to women between the ages of 13 and 30. However, this does not imply there are no older cutters. There are cutters of all ages, irrespective of gender. Most of these cutters are people who have been molested, physically abused, or subsisters of incest. Family histories of alcohol, drug abuse, and various personalities disorders can also conduce to cutters. Cutting is more like an addiction. Cutters know it's not the solution. However, they are unable to stop it. Each time they get depressed, they find this is the quickest way to soothe themselves. Thus, cutting is similar to any other addiction, like smoking, drinking, pornography, etc. Cutters often make decisions to stop cutting, however, find themselves resorting to the same the next time they hit a roadblock in their life. This is what we talked about earlier, and this is true. It's just another addiction, very sadly. Often, people pass it off as a nervous habit. However, this condition is a serious psychological disorder that needs medical attention. We need to perceive the graveness and implications of disorder. Having said this, it's important to ensure we don't pronounce cutters as lunatic or crazy people. Cutters are extremely brilliant, creative, and sensitive people who have undergone enough overwhelming situations in life. We cannot empathize with them. If we can't empathize with them, the least we can do is not judge or stigmatize them. Amen. Do not try to take their defense mechanism from them without helping them cope with their stress. Espousing cutters and their situations will help break chains of hopelessness. Get them to trust you. Listen patiently to them. Speak words of encouragement. Show them you care and pray for them. If you feel unequipped to help a cutter you know, lead them to somebody who can, but don't ignore them. Moreover, never gossip about them. There's nothing worse than gossiping about their condition. Now, let me say that everything that I just said are big issues, big issues. And of course, it is, again, about our own personal judgmentality. It is, again, about how we feel about others' plight. I met a man yesterday that I bought a car from. And he said to me, "You seem like a very nice lady." I said, "Thanks, I try." And he said, "It's a shame you don't get more connections like this." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "I don't know." He says, "It's so rare that you meet somebody that just seems nice. I said, you gotta get out of the circles you're in. And he laughed, you know, and he very warmly shook my hand, and I walked away. And I pondered that for a long time. And I thought to myself, is that true? Is it true that we've become so uncaring? We talk about the kids in school, and of course yesterday we talked about the bullying being done by that mom. And we talk about all the things that aren't explained to young people or talked through with young people. You know, when I was a little girl, I had a girlfriend. I want to say I was, I think I was in seventh grade. So I was the ages 12 and 13. And she thought that she could get pregnant if she kissed a boy. And I went, I don't think so. Who told you that? And she said, my mother. And, of course, I wasn't at 12 who I am today. So I thought, geez, nobody's ever told me that before. But before I say it's not true, maybe I better ask somebody. So I went home and I said to my mom, this is what this friend of mine had said to me. And she said, do you think that's true? And I said, I don't think so. Because you kiss your mom and dad, you kiss your grandma and grandpa. And by that time, I'd had boys kiss me. I mean, you know, not anything passionate, but kiss me. And I said, no, I don't think it has to do with your male and female organs and stuff, right, Mom? She said, exactly. So come to find out, this girlfriend, and I didn't know this until many years later, was being molested by her father. And I was so hurt by that, I realized years later that she was worried about that because that's what he was doing to her in the very beginning. And, of course, it escalated, and I found out about it years later. And I thought to myself, that must be why she asked me that question. So, and when it did come to light, her mother was one of those moms who didn't believe her. So life is what it is, right? So I want to say that if you're being bullied, picked on, if you were born a boy and wish you were a girl, or vice versa, or if you don't think the way everybody else you know thinks about life in general or about choices. Remember, we talked about choices the other day. That doesn't mean that you're the wrong one. That doesn't mean that. It just means that you are your own self. And I think that teaching young people that, I think there's more of that today. I do think it's a part of a classroom's repertoire to discuss the fact that we're all different and we all have different desires, different likes, different hates, different everything. And that's okay. And that's certainly the way it should be. But to let somebody drive you to do something, if you're listening out there and if you listen to this later on Blog Talk Radio, or if you click on my Facebook page and listen to this show, and you've had those tendencies in your life, I think you need to kind of examine what kind of things are going on in your life and what would bring you to a place where you'd need to feel that kind of pain, or where you dislike yourself so much that you're going to hurt yourself. Most important advice I can give you is to talk to somebody. Anybody. You could set your favorite teddy bear in front of you and share these secrets with your teddy bear. Talk out loud. Talk to the teddy bear who you trust and you love, and unload some of this unhappiness before you turn to things like this. You know, we are such a world of visualization. Every time I see a video like this one posted, I worry about young people who are betwixt and between some big challenge in their life. And they think, geez, I wonder if I'd feel better if I did that. I think I'm going to do that. Then I'll get everybody's attention. Whatever the reason is, I worry when we put that out there that somebody is going to push somebody in that direction. So before, if that's what it makes you feel like doing, before you do that, talk to somebody, even if it's your teddy bear. I think I shared this story a few weeks ago when we talked about addiction. And that was the story of a friend who is actually older than I am. They did a big special on HBO, and it was about crack addicts. And they profiled three individuals, all from different parts of, I think it was Chicago, and their life and what drove them to being addicted to crack. I watched it, made me cry, made me kind of sick to my stomach to realize that people live that way. And when it was almost over, which was midnight, I got a phone call from a friend who the outside world would never believe had an addiction like this. But he had buried the fact that he was homosexual, and at an older age came out of the closet, if you will, and the ridicule and the judgment and all the things that came with that drove him to smoke and crack. He'd been clean and sober, I knew, for at least 2 years. And watching this video or this documentary made him feel like he needed to go out right then and there and score some crack. He said, I've got to talk to a voice of reason. And your voice was the first one that came to my mind. So we talked for a long time. And I said, isn't it funny that that's how it affected you? And I watched it and felt sick for all those people. I said, you didn't feel any remorse for those people? He said, yeah, but doesn't matter. Just watching it being done made me crave that oblivion. So I found that to be very interesting and, of course, sad. He maintained, he stayed okay. To my knowledge, he's still okay today. But talking to somebody, and I didn't have to say any words of wisdom. I could have been a teddy bear. I could have just listened, like a teddy bear is prone to do. And it would have made a difference. So if seeing that video brings you to that place, you need to talk to somebody and get past it. Work through it. Use your memory bank to remember who you were, what you were, how much disdain you had for yourself during that time, and get through it. Now, if you feel like hurting yourself, not because of your choices, maybe none of these issues are a problem for you. homosexuality, acne. That's a biggie for pubescent teens. Obesity, anorexia, all these kind of things. So let me take back anorexia. You're just really skinny. You don't. You're just metabolism works like 50 million times faster than mine does. So you're really skinny. And these issues are brought to the attention of other people, and these other people are picking on you about it. Picking on you, calling you pizza face, calling you bony Maroney, calling you Fat Albert, whatever. And you can't, you feel like you really, really, really can't take it anymore? Talk to somebody. Because there are, in your own head, there are words and there is empathy that can actually get you through anything if you hone in on the positivity of your thoughts. Now, let me say that again. I don't want you to say, they're right, I am bony. They're right, I do have a pizza face, and then sink into that abyss. I don't care if you say you're right, I am skinny, they're right, I am skinny, or they're right, I do have, I'm having issues with my skin, but I've cut out this, I don't eat fatty foods, I'm using the medicine mom got me, this will get better. That's where you have to go. If you swallow what they're trying to feed you, you're going to be sick. So don't swallow other people's crap. Don't do it. Have a conversation with yourself. Realize who you are. Nobody really knows who you are inside. They only know what you put out there for them to see. Right? You know that. Everybody knows that. But you have got to wheel and deal with yourself. You've got to make yourself not swallow all that and realize that you are as eclectically perfect as you can be. And it's not about usually at the end of the day what you look like. Because when all is said and done, we're really just our spirit. And our spirit is just like the word sounds. It's free and it's open. And you have the ability to do whatever you want with your spirit. You can picture yourself flying above the clouds. You can picture yourself being your idea of perfect. You can do anything you want to with your spirit. But the only time a bully can really hurt you, really upset you, really put you in a bad place, is when you swallow what he's trying to tell you. So, you remember the words, all the names that the young boy said on the video. And he said, I'm not any of those. Of course he's not. Kid. And by the way, if you don't watch the video, he's just got the cutest, sweetest face you've ever seen. So he's got to rise above all of that. That's a big job. I get it. It's a very, very big job. Listen, I've looked different my whole life. I've never looked like everybody else. In sixth grade, everybody called me Jethreen. My father told me I should have been a boy because I could have been a linebacker for the Green Bay Packers. I was incredibly strong. I wasn't fat like I am today, but I was a big girl, like I said, strong enough to play football with the guys. I was relatively athletic, even though I could never hit a baseball very far or throw a baseball very far. I could throw footballs, I could play football. And then they would call me Jess Reaney, who was a Max Bear character on the Beverly Hillbillies. But I thought it was funny, and I thought it was true, because Max Bear dressed as his twin sister with a blonde wig on, and damn if she didn't look like me, or vice versa. So I just thought it was funny. I didn't let it hurt me or upset me. I agreed that it was true and thought it was funny. So it is all about how you take it in and what you make of it. Now, maybe let's look at the other side of a coin, too, if you're being bullied and being picked on and everything. Maybe you need to look around you, too. Sometimes putting things in perspective is very, very important. And by putting things in perspective, I mean by looking at what's going on for somebody else. Maybe there's somebody in your class who you know is physically ill. Maybe there's somebody in your class with a detrimental illness, leukemia or any other form of cancer. Or I once, when we were young kids, my mom had a friend whose daughter was born with a disorder. I've never learned too much about it, but her bones were brittle. My mom explained it to me as there were like holes in all of her bones. So if she played hard, she'd break a bone. So even at like age 11 and 12, when we went outside to play, she had to sit in a playpen. Imagine that. Imagine it. Everybody else is running and playing and swimming and swinging and having a great time, riding their bicycles and everything, and this little girl had to sit in a playpen. Kind of puts things in perspective if you have a big nose, doesn't it? Or if your legs are too skinny. Doesn't it put things in perspective for you? Doesn't it make you realize that sometimes you're the luckiest one on the block and you don't even know it? So if you get a chance, I'd like you to watch this video. And I want to remind everybody that I will not be on the show tomorrow. My son Michael, who is 44 years old, he'll be 45 in October, is having a major, major surgery tomorrow morning. He was hit by a car when he was 13 years old. He was intubated for 10 days because he was in a coma. He damaged his brainstem, and your brainstem is what monitors your breathing and your memory. And his short-term memory, even today at 44, is not what it should be. His long-term memory is awesome. He can go back 25 years and tell you things that the rest of us don't remember. But if you ask him what he just finished eating, he struggles with that. But right after his son got hurt, we saw a decline in his health. And now his trachea beneath his chest cavity is closing. And it is in such distress that most of the time he can't breathe. So when we looked at the PET scans and when we saw the endoscopy done, we could see the opening for his breathing is like a flattened straw. So for the last few days, he's been at our new home here, our cute little place that we downsized to, so that we can keep him under surveillance, if you will. So he doesn't get excited, doesn't overdo. Taking a shower puts him into the place where he can barely breathe. And because it's a different situation, it's not something that happens to everybody, when they open him up tomorrow, they're not really sure what procedure they're going to use. So it will be a frightening day, one of, I hope, lots of prayers and positive wishes coming from all of you. We believe mightily in prayer and positive energy, mightily. We're a family who has survived many traumas, many unfortunate circumstances, and we're still standing. So I appreciate anything that is directed towards my son, Michael. His name is Michael Robert Brewer. And by Thursday morning, I'll be back on the show. And we will be rejoicing in his recovery and the fact that he can finally breathe without all the effort that he has to use right now to get a breath. He says to me all the time, "Mom, there isn't anything that's worse than not being able to get a breath. If you've ever choked, if you've ever aspirated, if you've ever had such a terrible, terrible swollen throat and adenoids and all those kind of things that you can't get a breath, I'm sure you can commiserate with him." But that's where I will be with Michael and his wife, Valerie, in University of Miami Hospital tomorrow morning. And my family will be united in prayer and in thought until Michael comes back home again. He'll be in the hospital for 5 days. And we are looking forward to the ease of this trauma. So, everybody else, I'm sitting here in my new little, off my kitchen, I have like a breakfast room, and it's kind of like round, has one flat wall, but then it has bay windows all the way around, four big windows. And the sun is shining, and the grass looks so green. It's a beautiful, beautiful day out there today. So everybody go out and make it the best. Keep Michael in your prayers and in your thoughts. And I will be back Thursday morning. I want you all to have a great day. And if you've got plight going on in your life, our prayers and our good wishes are with you. So God bless everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. I'll be back Thursday. Bye-bye.